In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
A $23 avocado wrap, a bougie weekend in the Hamptons, and living rent-free in New York City. Those are just a few of the details that had readers reeling from a recent installment of Refinery29's Money Diaries. The online series asks millennial women to detail a week of their spending in their own words. But the account from a 21-year-old marketing intern prompted bigger questions about financial transparency and who gets to talk about money. Is money, as Refinery29 puts it, the last taboo facing modern working women? Why is talking about money so awkward? And why are we so quick to judge how other people spend their money? I'm Ashani Nath, senior editor at Flare.com, and this is The Big Story.
Having these perspectives where you can really see someone's full financial picture is one of the best ways that we can debunk keeping up with the Joneses, because you see the full pictures.
Desiree Ojic is a financial blogger, and she's here to help us understand the value of talking about money, even when it makes us want to cringe. Desiree, for those who aren't familiar with Refinery29's Money Diaries, how would you describe this series?
The series is an interesting look at money because it's not your typical money advice column. So each article is written by a woman who's accounting for her own income, her own spending, and details exactly where her money goes for the time of a week.
Was there a particular part of the intern's account that stood out for you personally?
At the top of every money diary, the person writing the article shares their monthly expenses. So you're going into this with the framing of, okay, this is an intern. She makes $25 in New York City. And right at the top of the article, you see monthly expenses, rent, $0, healthcare, $0. I'm on my parents' plan, cell phone, same thing. And you really start to get a sense that, oh, this is not going to be an account living on $25 an hour in New York City.
Yeah, that idea of how it was framed was really brought up a lot in terms of the criticism of this story. When we're talking about stories where potentially the person is a little bit more privileged, how can we properly account for privilege when we're talking about money?
I think the very first and most important thing when there's privilege in conversations about money is to simply acknowledge it. So in this piece, it wasn't acknowledged in the framing of the article in the title, and the only acknowledgement the author gave for her very privileged circumstances was a hashtag blessed after sharing that her grandfather also sends her $300 a month. So not only was it not really prevalent throughout the article that there were advantages in her situation beyond just her salary, she also addressed it in a very flippant way, which I think was a big source of the backlash, in that she really had no concept that this is not what it's like to live on $25 an hour in New York City.
So when we're talking about that transparency, I know in your article for Flare, you mentioned relating to that a little bit in terms of your own experience when you started at a marketing firm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Definitely. I think that this is one of the big reasons that I'm such an advocate for pieces like this and for transparency around someone's complete financial picture, even if it means seeing that, yes, they're a little oblivious, let's say, to what that financial picture really entails and what really makes it possible. So when I started in my career, I was working for a very entry-level salary. I was the most junior person on my team in a marketing agency. So it was not paying the big bucks, let's put it that way. And there were times where I would just look around at my team, many of whom didn't make much more than me. And I was like, how are you affording that? And not anything luxurious, right? They weren't going to the Hamptons for casual weekends and complaining they weren't on the big boat, which was a line from this article that really stuck with me. But there were things like that. So how are you affording to take that vacation and live in an apartment that has appliances from this century, because I can't do either of those things. And I really, really am curious about how you make this work financially. Because when you're looking at someone else's financial life, most of the time, that's all the information you get. So spending, especially spending that's really obvious, whether it's sharing fancy meals on Instagram, oh, we bought a house, or oh, we're hosting this giant wedding, that spending is very clear to other people. But what's really opaque in most situations is how they're affording it. And that's where I think the value of this piece really comes in that you get to see how she can actually live this life on an intern's salary.
When we don't talk about money and when we don't talk about that spending, how does that impact our own perceptions of where we should be?
There's this saying, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, and whether the Joneses are your coworkers or people you follow on social media, that's something a lot of us tend to do. I mean, it didn't become this cliched saying for a reason, but I think it's really natural for all of us to look around at what we think of as our peer group, people who are like us. And if all we see is the spending and there's no conversations about how they can afford that spending, you never really know what their situation is behind closed doors. So you don't know if they're actually in your peer group. For this woman, I think that her coworkers, so her other fellow interns, would have looked at her lifestyle and her spending and said, how on earth is this possible if we objectively make the same salary? And I think that there's a lot of things, a lot of people would feel badly about their own financial life if they're trying to compare if she seems like she should be in that set of like, these are my Joneses. These are people that I should be about equal to and be able to afford about what they can afford. And I think that that's where the real value comes in terms of being transparent, even anonymously in these kinds of articles.
That brings up one of the major questions. And this is one of the criticisms of this article, was that this 21-year-old intern should not be writing about money. But who should be writing about money?
I'm biased because I am a financial blogger. So I have seen firsthand how much it has helped me to read and share other people's stories about money, whether they're anonymous, they share all the details or not. Getting that extra context from being in this world of people who write about money has been so helpful for helping me understand my own finances, make my own decisions, and almost learn by osmosis about how other people are managing their money and how I can apply that to my own life. And so I really would say that everyone should be writing and sharing these stories. And it's not something that a lot of people are going to be comfortable with. Obviously, when you see the reaction to this piece especially, that really would make a lot of people very reticent to say, okay, well, if she gets family money and I get family money, I can never talk about this. And I think that that kind of shutting down of the conversation is so unfortunate, because having these perspectives where you can really see someone's full financial picture and how they make their lifestyle work is one of the best ways that we can debunk keeping up with the Joneses, because you see the full picture. You don't just see the spending, and you're not just left questioning, I wonder how she can afford a $200 gym membership on an intern salary in New York City.
You're reading a lot of these accounts for your own personal, I guess, benefit and in a constructive way, but Refinery29 noted that ever since they started this series in 2016, their comments have been full of judgment. There's a lot of people reading these as hate reads. Why do we love to judge how people choose to spend their money?
It's really interesting in the context of considering money as the last taboo, because one of the things that I've always thought about your spending is I link it back to that saying of show me how you spend your time and I'll show you what you value. And this really is one way for people to, in a very bald-faced, transparent, open, and honest way, say, this is what I value. This is how I spent my time and my money this week. And it's very easy for anyone who doesn't agree with those values to jump in, to hate read, to leave mean comments. The anonymity granted to these writers is one of the only reasons that they're able to get such interesting, informative profiles of their weekly spending. Because even as a financial writer, I don't know many people who would be willing to attach their name and their face and say, this is exactly how I afford my life. This is exactly where I spend my money every week. Because it is standing up and saying, this is what I value, critique away. That's why you see such vitriol directed at these people about what they're spending.
We're in a cultural moment right now where women are encouraged to treat ourselves and live however we want. But at the same time, we're the product of the recession and struggling to hold down stable jobs. Do you feel like millennial women face different pressures when it comes to their income and how they spend it?
On a broad scale, definitely. Millennial women are in this interesting moment where there are a lot of economic factors that are outside of an individual's control. So yes, how you spend the money that you have available is always within your control, but there are bigger factors at play that impact how much money is available to you as a millennial, as a woman, and how much you need to spend on other things. Healthcare costs are on the rise. Rent is on the rise in many major markets. And those are factors that realistically, there's only so much you can do to impact those on a personal level. As women, especially, it's very easy for some of the spending that we do to be judged more harshly. If I said to you, I'm going to spend $200 on books this month, that's very different and very differently received than I'm going to spend $200 on makeup this month. There's no inherent value to either of them other than what I choose to spend my money on, but they will be judged very differently. There's the millennials being judged on their spending and the women being judged on their spending. You put those together, and I think that that's something that makes it very difficult.
We're talking about financial transparency, and obviously there's been a lot of push towards being more open about how we spend our money. Is there a way to have these conversations so that they're more constructive?
I think that there is a way that we can make these conversations more constructive. And I think that it starts within your own social circle. I don't think anyone is arguing that putting everything you earn and everything you spend on the internet under your real name is going to be the best route. However, using these articles and using this conversation that started around this article in particular to have conversations with the people in your life about these kind of things. So whether or not it's sharing salary ranges with friends who are in your social circle or in your career circles to see how much everyone is making, even if it's a range, if you frame that as a constructive, we're sharing for the benefit of the group so we understand what we should be asking for at different parts in our career. Or we share rough numbers with friends, or we ask more questions about what you spent on your gym membership. Or, oh, I see you've worked with a personal trainer. Do you mind me asking how much that cost? I'm thinking of doing it myself. My favorite example right now is weddings, because I'm planning a wedding myself, and having other people share with me how much they actually paid for different aspects of their event or how they saved money, it's one money conversation. So it's not the full transparent, here's my entire salary, here's exactly how much we spend on everything, but it is one way of building a bit more transparency into the conversations we have with the people that, frankly, we consider our Joneses about what they're really spending and how they're making it work. It doesn't have to be everything to start with, but using this moment and this topic to bring up small moments of transparency can really benefit a lot of people.
Desiree Ojic is a financial blogger. Oh, and by the way, she's saving half her income. You can read about it at her site, halfbanked.com. That was The Big Story. I'm Ashani Nath. Thanks for listening.
Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.